You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Are friends with fantasy benefits. Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Well, to be fair, Chris Carter can't hit lefties or righties, and Mike Napoli.
But he can hit the long ball like a motherfucker.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Tommy Joseph looks like, if you look at his picture on MILB.com, looks like a dad from a sitcom. Like, but he's only 25 years old, so that's it.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
It's shocking he's 25, seriously. If you're listening right now, go and like look at a picture of him and tell me he's not 40.
As the one guy on this podcast that is in his mid-40s.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Mike Warner and Matt Thompson. Mike, how you doing?
Doing well. Baseball's like right around the corner at this point. I think pitchers and catchers report in a little bit over a week, I want to say. And it's exciting. The Super Bowl's finally over and everybody can kind of forget about the game and the game of football at least and move on to the better sport. I'm really excited.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of like everybody coming out today and being like, look, it's baseball season now, because I don't know. I've done like 60 podcasts in the last month. So
yeah, we've been busy. I don't know.
To me, it feels like baseball has been going nonstop since about 2014. And we started Friends Fantasy Benefits. But for everybody else, it's baseball season. Matt, how are you?
Really good, man. The weather's pretty warm out here and unseasonably warm for Chicago, so I'll take it. It makes it feel like baseball's a little closer, but then I looked at the weather report. We got a 30-degree weather day coming tomorrow, so much for that, right?
Nice. joining us on this episode is our friend Jason Collette from RotoWire, Sleeper in the Buzz, The Process Report, pretty much everywhere. Jason, how are you?
I'm similarly enjoying good weather in Charlotte. We started the day at 30 degrees and we got up to 72 at one point today. So that was a weird swing out of nowhere. And then I'm off to San Juan, Puerto Rico for 2 days later this week, which the weather will be even nicer before I go to Columbus and Rapid City next week. And the weather won't be so nice there.
Well, I don't know how you guys got lucked out with all this really nice weather, because I'm sitting out here in California and it's pouring.
Boo-hoo.
Yeah.
Don't you guys need rain, like, perennially?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, it's been our wettest year, I think, in, 25 years or something like that. So we definitely need it. But, Jason, for those people out there who don't know who you are or don't follow your stuff, let them know what you do, where you write, where you can be heard, and then where you can be reached on social media.
Okay, so I write a weekly column at RotoWire called Collect Calls. It goes on normally Mondays. It's going tomorrow this week because we're being Tuesday because of the Super Bowl and everybody else being distracted and myself as well. And I have the podcast Sleeper in the Bust with Paul Spohr that we record on Sundays as well, because I'm a very busy person during the week. So if I seem very quiet on social media, it's because I have a day job that keeps me extremely busy, and a lot of airplanes and cars and whatnot. So the weekends and the weeknights are when I get to do things. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, that's at Jason Collette, 2 L's, 2 T's, and a very important E at the end.
Definitely.
Jason, I'm always fascinated with how much traveling you always do, man. It seems like it's crazy.
It's a bunch. I'm diamond platinum on Delta this year. I am Platinum Elite and at Marriott and Avis Preferred. I do have, it's like up in the air. I have the cards. That trip to Rapid City I mentioned, that's a family vacation next weekend, fully funded on Travel Points.
Oh, nice.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's the way to go.
Oh. Yeah, that's the benefit. That's the upside to all
the
travel.
Yeah, that's the real benefit.
You could take a 40 weekend to go visit Mount Rushmore on President's Day weekend on points.
All right. Well, let's. This week we are talking first baseman on a majority of the podcast. I think Monday, Wednesday, and Friday are going to be hitting pretty much the entire depth of the first baseman pool. So I picked a list of 10 guys for us to discuss tonight. We will jump into that right now. And we'll start with Paul Goldschmidt, obviously a first-rounder. Last year, I had him as my number one overall player. That didn't quite pan out as well as I hoped it would, but I still stand by the rationale. Jason, what are your thoughts on Paul Goldschmidt for this year? Where would you take him in the first round?
Where would I take him in the first round? I would take him in the top half of the first round. It's just when you look at the five-category production that he's able to bring and how he excels in four of those categories at first base. The home runs aren't at the top level, but everything else is. The stolen bases pretty much put him in a class by himself. I know what Myers did last year. I'm not projecting him to get up that high again in stolen bases, but Goldschmidt's almost in a class by himself, and find me another first baseman that you can project for 100 runs scored and 100 runs driven in. It's just not there. It's just, he's a beast. He's in the top half. I'm probably thinking if I had the fifth pick, fourth pick in labor, which I don't. I have the ninth pick with Paul, ninth or tenth this year. I would take him if we were higher, but he's no way he's ever going to fall to us. I normally never even get to own Paul Goldschmidt because every one of these drafts I'm in, I always seem to have a back end of the first round pick.
Well, I mean, yeah, I agree with you. I would take him in the top five. Though currently he's going as the number seventh overall player on NFBC leagues. I think there is a shot that you could get him with that ninth pick because we've seen some weird Trey Turner picks.
Going number one overall I saw the other day.
Yeah, in a couple what? Drafts I've seen it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Todd Zola was saying he was at a draft what? And Trey Turner went 1-1.
Mm-hmm. I'm the biggest Trey Turner fan here, but that is absolutely no.
Never. And then you'll have some people who decide they want to maybe take a Max Scherzer a little bit earlier. I think there is a chance he could fall to you guys at nine, so I wouldn't rule that one out. Preferably for me, like you said, I've got him as a top five guy. I've mentioned my thoughts on the first base pool this year being a little bit thin after you get past, you know, kind of the first and second tier of first base. So Goldschmidt is definitely a guy I am eyeing in my drafts early. Mike, what are your thoughts on Paul Goldschmidt for this season?
Yeah, Jason, there's no way you're getting Goldschmidt at nine. I can guarantee you that. He's too good of a player. I will say, you know, the 32 stolen bases, that won't repeat, and I don't think anybody is projecting him to do so. But, you know, only Will Myers was the only first baseman to even come close to matching those stolen bases, and it's kind of what made him so valuable last year, Goldschmidt, despite having a career low in fly ball percentage and, you know, only hitting 24 home runs. The fact that he stole those bases, especially in the second half, really helped you out. And, you know, it's just consistent with him. He consistently plays. He offers, you know, some type of production in every single category. I mean, it's really just, you know, same old thing with Goldschmidt. Every single year he produces, and there's not much to really say. He's a front. I'd say he's a top six pick in my opinion, and he should be.
Matt, any thoughts on Paul Goldschmidt?
I'm lockstep with you. Got him top six pick for me. I mean, you got to think. I mean, last year was his career down year offensively. Mike hinted on it. He hit more ground balls than normal, but I mean, he supplemented it with 32 steals from first base. I mean, that's a crazy number. It's interesting to know. I mean, I'm not projecting him for 30 steals again. I still think upper or lower to mid 20s is probably more realistic. But it's interesting with, you know, Toy Lavallo being there next year, if he's going to run as much. I don't know what the philosophy will be with him there coming from Boston. But I mean, yeah, anytime you can get a guy coming off a down year that, you know, down year that stole 32 bags and still managed to hit over 20 home runs at first base, I think you'll take that.
I think that's a really interesting point, though, that you bring up that. You know, new manager, they may have a little bit change in philosophy. They traded Gene Segura, a speedy guy at the top of the lineup. Any chance that scares you away from taking him, Jason?
No, it doesn't. I mean, you're also getting Pollock back, so you lose one, you gain another, and I'm not going to run away from him because he doesn't have the table setter. None of us thought Gene Segura was going to do what he did last year. I mean, and I had him. I took him, I think, of $16 is what I ended up trading for him in NL League. I mean, I liked him last year, but even liking him, I never saw and was never able to predict what he was able going to what he did. So the same kind of thing this year. You look at the lineup and you just draft the skills and hope everything else around it falls in.
All right, let's move on to Joey Votto. He's currently going in NFBC leagues as the number fourth first baseman off the board, around pick 24-25. Jason, what are your thoughts on Joey Votto this year? Is that fairly priced or a little high, a little low?
I think it's a little high, but only because you don't worry about Joey Votto. He's going to do what he's going to do. It's just who's he going to drive in? Who's going to drive him in? I mean, lineup protection is about who's in front of you and behind you. And, you know, for him, you've got Adam Duvall behind him. And how much confidence do you have in Duvall having a decent year behind him? And Brandon Phillips, who obviously doesn't want to be traded from Cincinnati, wants to stay there. Scott Schebler, who probably going to be platoon with Desmond Jennings. You've got Cozart in front of him. It's just, Votto's out there on an island, and in an OBP league, obviously he's going to excel because they're going to pitch around him, but he's not going to swing, that type of thing. I know I made the comment just a second ago where you draft the skills and don't worry about, but I hope the other pieces fall into place. At least Arizona has pieces. Since he doesn't have pieces, you've got Billy Hamilton, who is the ultimate wild card at the top of that lineup, and then there's a lot of other garbage around this beautiful gem at first base. So Votto is somebody that I'm hoping other people take, so I don't I'm not forced to take him, because I'm like, why the hell is Joey Votto still sitting out here? Because I'm just not that excited about him this year.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Joey Votto for this year? Are you a little tepid on him as well?
No, I'm actually the opposite. I love Votto, and I'll be glad to end up with him. You got to think. I mean, I like Jason's point about the lineup around him, but I mean, the lineup what Votto had around him in the second half of last year was terrible, and he was amazing. his OBP in the second half is over 500. He hit 408, I believe, or something crazy like that. And it was a ridiculous second half. Yeah, I mean, he got off to a slow start. He had 229 in April, 200 in May, but then the last 4 months of the year, he had 319, 413, 394, 395. You know. He's always going to be a high OBP guy. If you play in OBP leagues, he's a definite first-round pick. Slugging percentage was still there in the second half. Walked 15 more times in the second half than he struck out. Hit 15 home runs. I don't think it gets much safer here at first. And I think he's squarely – I'm probably a little different than most. I have him at the back end of my I guess Goldschmidt's in his own tier for me, but I have Votto right with Rizzo and Cabrera, and some guys have him below, but he's right there with me for me. So I'm all in on Votto. If I can get him, I'm going to get him.
All right, Mike, where do you stand on Votto?
Yeah, I think I'm consistent with Jason. I love the player, and I think Votto is, you know, as good as it gets at first base, but I hate the lineup. I mean, the Reds ended up, you know, at 18th in runs scored last season, and I just don't know if I can bank. I mean, I'm looking through their lineup right now, and, you know, Cozart's coming back. We don't know what we'll get out of him. Adam Duvall, I think it's a stretch to predict he will continue what he did last season. Brandon Phillips, Scott Schebler. I mean, it just, I don't love this lineup. And while I do love Jose Peraza, and I think that he will add a nice speed element to the team, I always, you know, worry about Votto's health as well. I know the last 2 years, actually three of the last four, have been really solid in terms of him staying on the field. But I just always have it in the back of my head that, you know, he could get injured at any time. And that's any ball player. But there's just a little more added risk for Votto with me. And it's not that I'm avoiding him. I just don't really feel confident that he's going to exceed his draft costs in any meaningful way. The power isn't extreme for a first baseman, and you're not really buying him for power. You're buying him because of his plate skills, and especially in OBP formats, like Matt already mentioned, he's, you know, exceptional. But the counting stats, I'm just a little worried about, even though, again, the lineup, I just don't think is going to be as good as it was last year, and that was 18th. I can't count on him, A, for health, and B, just for the surrounding cast around him.
Yeah, I think I fall into Matt's camp a little bit. I understand the questions about the lineup, but like Matt said, the last half of last year, it wasn't like the lineup was great. It's not like the lineup's been that great in Cincinnati for the last couple years. So to me, I'm less worried about lineup protection, and I think the health piece has been answered by the last 2 years. He's been able to get over 600 plate appearances in his last two seasons. I worry maybe the power takes a little bit of a step back. You know, maybe doesn't hit 29 home runs. Maybe it's more in the, you know, 23 to 25 range. And that would be my big question. But personally, I think he's safe. There's a really nice floor there. You're not worrying about the bottom kind of falling out on Votto. So I'm fine taking him in the range that he is. I may prefer E5 a little bit to Votto, but I think that's kind of, you know, picking a little bit too hard.
I mean, I think it's criminal that a guy that's been on base 44% of the time over the past 2 years has scored fewer than 200 runs. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you put him on another lineup, it's astounding what he's able to do. But the fact he's on base so frequently, and when I say that he's 196 runs, and that ranks him 14th over the past 2 years, that puts him 50 full runs behind Josh Donaldson. Similar on base, you know, on base monsters. Mike Trout's at 227, Mookie Betts at 214, Arenado 213. You got Votto down there at 196. Hell, Chris Davis has scored more runs than Joey Votto over the last couple of years. It's just criminal. That's why he's being wasted. It's so awful because again, 447 OBP over the past 2 years. Everybody else with that kind of OBP is up over 200 runs, and he's down there. He's 50 runs behind Josh Donaldson.
God, and I forgot how long of a contract he still has.
I mean, he's signed to like 2069.
Yeah, he's signed through 2023 at pretty much $25 million a year every year until then, except for this year where he's making $22 million. And he's got a $20 million dollar team option in 2024. So. And a full no trade clause, so he's not going anywhere. All right, let's move over to Will Myers, who I'm sure there's going to be some charged emotions on this one, considering he was a Ray. Jason, I'll let you start this off. What are your thoughts on Will Myers after his breakout last year?
Good for him. I've gotten over it. good for him. Eh? I get frustrated when the team gives up on somebody like that. I mean, and there's plenty of reason if you believe some of the stories about him being disconnected. If you think back to when he won Rookie of the Year and he came on with that "I just woke up" hairdo and coming on TV, and that kind of summed up his time. But you go out there to San Diego and you get a fresh new start, and he took full advantage of it. And you know, a lot of this was front loaded, so the back half was a little light on things. And when you look at if things are going to repeat, I'm regressing him back down a bit. It was nice to see him running as much as he was, but I don't think he's going to steal more than 20 this year. The power, he could do mid 20s again. But batting average is going to be where it is because those plate habits are real. He can take a walk and he can expand his strike zone when he tries to do too much with the pitch. So his triple slash line was like around 260, 340, 460, I think. Take that down just a tick, and then stolen bases, 18 to 20, home runs, mid-20s.
Mike, you I'm sure have some more charged opinions on Will Myers, so go ahead, jump in. What are your thoughts on Will Myers for this year?
Yeah, Jason's a lot more mature than I am. I can't stand Will Myers, and I will never get over the fact that he was, you know, all of those things, just lackadaisical. It just, his attitude on the baseball field and off, I just did not care for. I'm happy he's not a Ray. I'm, you know, and I will always be happy he's not a Ray. He doesn't deserve to be on the Rays. And, you know, I honestly think that until he matures himself, he won't be on a winning ball club, you know, because he's just not the type. I feel like he was just trying to accrue stats last year. And I mean, the Padres didn't have a chance, but, you know, the Padres will be, again, that bad. So if you're kind of looking at it as, you know, will they give him the opportunity to steal that many bases again? Maybe. You know, I mean, they have nothing to play for this season. Maybe he does get that opportunity, but I'm not going to bank on that. First off, he's an injury risk, and he's had injuries to his wrists and, you know, other problems that could certainly limit his power. But I look more towards the second half, you know, kind of like Jason talked about. In the second half, or really from July on, he hit 230, 318, 381. That's not going to cut it. I do expect the stolen bases to go down. He might still be a 15 stolen base guy, which is great at first base, but I was shocked that I didn't even know he stole 28 bases until about a month and a half ago. And I'm still shocked that even happened. I don't think that's something that's going to continue. I still think he's a mid 20s home run guy, but that stats again, you know, barring health, and him going in the top 60 is ludicrous to me. There's no way I would take him at that cost. Even somebody like Jose Abreu, who I'm a little bit down on, I would gladly take behind him. Crush Davis, Hanley Ramirez, even who I know we're going to talk about, I would gladly take above Myers just because it's been one season, and personally, I just can't bank on the health. And secondly, I just don't think. I think naturally he's going to regress in multiple counting stats.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Will Myers?
Well, I mean, again, to echo what Mike said, I mean, he built his breakout season. I mean, he's able to more than double, his career high in games played for a season, pretty much. So number one, he's still a health concern for me. 28 season, that's not happening again. He hit 19 of his 28 homers in the first 85-ish games. Went down the stretch, only hit 9 in the last 70. I mean, the second half fade was real. He did improve overall as a hitter. His batting profile was better. His career low 8% swing strike rate. That's really, really nice. And he did use opposite field more. But, I mean, I'm not going to be too invested in him because that second half drop-off was steep. And it was enough for me to. I mean, the strikeouts went way up. 7% rise in the second half. OPS dropped nearly 200 points. I don't see him repeating this, and I'm right in line with Jason. I think 22 homers is more realistic for me, and probably 15 steals, which is still a nice player, but nowhere near where he's going.
I think the one thing, because I mean, I agree with you guys in a lot of the points you've made, and especially in terms of, I mean, he had more plate appearances last season than he did the previous 2 years combined. So, I mean, I don't want to bank on the health. I know moving to first base, should help and hopefully keep him a little bit healthier. But, I mean, he's definitely no guarantee for another 600 plate appearances. My issue is a lot of what we were talking about, or what Jason and Mike were talking about in terms of Joey Votto, is that lineup is awful.
God-awful.
I mean, and he had 99 runs scored, 94 RBIs. There is no way that those are repeatable for me. I actually wouldn't be surprised to see him steal 25 bases next year, because the Padres were fifth in baseball with most stolen bases last year. They're a team that doesn't have much in terms of offensive ability, and so maybe they try to just create on the base paths and let him run wild. So that wouldn't surprise me. I think maybe the power takes, a tick back. But to me, it's going to be a little bit empty power, empty speed. You're not going to get any help, and I agree with what Mike said. I think I'd rather have Hanley. I'd rather have some other guys at the first base position because of health, because of the lineup around him. I just don't think that the entirety of that season is going to be repeatable for him.
The lineup is a great point, too, because if you look at the first half, which is where he excelled, that was when B.J. Upton or Melvin Upton had his amazing, run. Kemp also had a really good power surge in the first half as well, so that easily could have aided his counting stats. I think the lineup is an amazing point.
I mean, when you've got Solarte hitting cleanup, things aren't going to go well.
It's not great.
No. let's move on and talk about the aforementioned Hanley Ramirez. Mike, you said you would take Hanley over Will Myers. What are your thoughts on him for this season?
Yeah, I mean, I like, first off, I'm a little worried that Dave Ortiz is gone, because I know they're very close, and not to say that that's going to, really hurt his fantasy value. He came back last season and put up a monstrous year. A lot of it was aided in the second half, more specifically in September, where he hit, 10 bombs and over 313 average. I mean, he had a great September. So if you take that month out, which you can't do, it would have been a lot more average. But, I don't think he's going to be as good as he was last season, but I don't think he's going to be as bad as he was in 2015. Right now his ADP has him at 80. I think that that's okay, but I'm not drafting him anywhere based on the cost. I would rather wait on somebody like Eric Hosmer, who I know a lot of people are worried about the power profile still. But I think all around, I think Hosmer is a better bet for this season. And I would rather either go with one of the top guys or go with somebody like Hosmer a little bit later, just based on the fact that Hanley is aging. He hasn't been somebody that stayed healthy. I'm a little worried about the Ortiz thing. And I just don't think that he will be as good as he was last year, which he'll need to be if he wants to, kind of be useful at that cost.
Jason, what are your thoughts on Hanley?
Love him. I absolutely love him for this year. When you look at the numbers, go back to about mid-June, start from the beginning of the season until mid-June, he wasn't hitting for power. I mean, there was some average there, but he wasn't hitting for any power. He made some physical changes at the plate and the stance, did a whole bunch of stuff with the hands, the way he was loading, changed the stance up a little bit, the lower half, and from June 15th on, absolutely crushed the baseball. I believe it was something like a 586 slugging percentage the rest of the way, 290. I mean, he made the changes, and then the changes led to results. So it wasn't all this, oh, lucky this, lucky that. And he just started putting more loft to the baseball, because early on, he was hitting a lot of stuff down into the ground, and then it really took off. I mean, the exact numbers, 298, 377, 596 from June 15th through the rest of the season. Hit 26 of his 30 home runs after June 15th. And that's the kind of guy that I'm looking at the rest of the way. In fact, I just took him in the fifth round of a mock draft I'm doing with the Fantasy 411 folks. That's how high I am on him this year.
Matt, are you high or are you low on Hanley Ramirez?
I'm right around where Mike is, a little bit lower than Jason. There's a lot to like here. Like you said, the monster second half has definitely helped the numbers. I mean, the home run spike after June was crazy. But the thing here that bothers me a little bit here is he's kind of a guy, like, he struggled with the bat when he was playing the outfield. He seemed to be, you know, a guy that needs to play first base every day, which is hopefully that's what happens. But I mean, he's a really, Boston is really, really depending on Hanley in the middle of their lineup. I mean, I guess trading for Chris Sale is a good way to cover up replacing David Ortiz with Mitch Moreland, right? I mean, it's essentially what they did on offense, and they're definitely requiring Hanley to be that guy. And I don't know if Hanley can take the pressure of being the guy on a big team, only because he's kind of, I don't want to say he's dealt with mental issues or anything like that, because it's not, but it's issues being the guy, and I don't know if he can handle that. He's seems like a very high maintenance player, I guess is a nice way to put it. So I don't know what to think of the numbers, because now he's entrusted into a bigger role on a team that has championship aspirations, and I just don't know if he can do that.
I mean, I don't know. One, the outfield piece, you got to remember, he was on fire until he ran into that wall. And you know, he was looking like the old Hanley until he ran into the wall and got hurt. Last year he's able to come in healthy and really put things together. I mean, he was the guy in Florida for a long time. Now, I know Florida is a different market in Miami than it is in Boston, especially in terms of baseball. But I'm not necessarily worried about that. I'm with Jason on this. I think he is a fantastic option, a guy that you should target maybe a round or two before where he's going. You know, he's going to bat in the middle of, you know, probably the best, if not one of the best, lineups in baseball. I love the mechanical changes he made in order to improve last year. I think they're completely legit. You know, I wish he still had the same speed that he used to, but he still delivers a handful of stolen bases every year, which helps supplement, especially in today's age, in terms of speed on the base paths around the league. So for me, I'm all aboard the Hanley train. Let's go ahead and move over and talk about Albert Pujols. Matt, what are your thoughts on Pujols this year after last season?
Man, I guess the biggest predictor of injuries is injuries, and he's hurt right now. So that shows you a little bit of value, a little bit of how I view him now. I mean, it's sad it's come to this. I mean, Albert Pujols was far and beyond my favorite player in baseball when he was on my Cardinals, and it's kind of sad to see where he's at in the Angels, but I mean, thank God he's got the DH, because I mean, he's finally had surgery on that plantar fasciitis, which he was dealing with when he was in St. Louis days. He had that elbow issue that he finally got fixed. I mean, he had ankle and hamstring issues last year, more foot injuries, like I said. He barely got first base eligibility this year. It's not a slam dunk. He gets it next year with the way the Angels lineup is constructed. I mean, if CJ Cron stays healthy, he could just be that, and Pujols could just be the DH. And not that CJ Cron's anything great, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get on board of the hype. I mean, yeah, he's going to give you I can't bet on him knocking in 119 runs again. I guess he is hitting out of Mike Trout, but he's going to miss some time. And he hit a pretty empty, 40 home runs 2 years ago. And I kind of think it's going to be, you know, an empty 30 this year. 30 home runs, 80 RBIs, 250 average. That's not inspiring for me. So, unfortunately, I hate to say it, but I'm out on Mr. Albert.
Jason, what are your thoughts on Pujols this year? Are you out on him as well?
Not where he's being taken. I mean, his ADP right now is, you know, on a high end 78, a low end 184. His average is 134, and then there's that next drop down. The 30 after is Gonzalez, and then Belt, then Joseph, then Cron. I mean, with Pujols, he's only hit fewer than 28 home runs once in his entire career, and it's that second year with the Angels. The home runs have been there. The RBIs have this weird, Saberhagen metrics thing going on. We're a triple digit, double digit, triple digit, double digit, triple digit, double digit, triple digit. So I guess it'll be a double digit this year. It's just a weird pattern kind of thing. The batting average obviously is just not where it used to be. But the power, he's still driving in those runs because he's got that monster on base, two slots in front of him. And you can pencil in the home runs because he's done it all but one season of his career. And where he's being taken, yeah, in the past I didn't want the guy, but it seems like his value is down enough where I'm back in.
Mike, are you back in or are you staying away?
He's a very interesting case. I want to be in because I think that he will hit for just as good a power. I mean, the fact that he's getting the plantar fasciitis, you know, repaired is actually a really good sign for his power. I mean, he's been hitting for power and he's had this problem for a long time now. So you would expect for the power to definitely continue. My issue is I don't know when he's going to be coming back, like officially. Like, is he going to start the season? I doubt it. You know, so say we take, you know, 80 at bats out of his, you know, projection or 100 at bats out of his projection, then if I was expecting him to hit 35 home runs, you drop that to what, you know, 27, 26, somewhere in there. And, you know, based on the 130 tag, I can definitely get a guy around that area that's going to hit me 25 plus home runs and probably provide me some stolen bases as well. So chances are I won't be drafting him, but it's not because I don't like him. I like his profile. I still think he's going to be, at the end of the day, a 25-plus, possibly 30 home run guy with a 270-ish average and, you know, should be able to get some good RBI numbers, even though it has been a pattern these last few years, like Jason mentioned with the RBI numbers back and forth. But I still think he's a quality player despite his age and despite the fact that he's going to miss some time. In shallower formats, if you can, you know, kind of put him on your DL for a little while and have good replacement value, then I think that he's a solid draft pick at where he's going. But in deeper formats where you need the stability, I think I would go another route.
Having watched Pujols, you know, play for a majority of his career, he's the type of guy, he's going to play through the injury, whether that's good or bad. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to decide if you want that or not. He's going to play through it. He might hit 220, but he's going to play. I mean, that's the type of guy that he is. And like you said, for fantasy, you don't know if that's the best thing or not.
Yeah, for me, I think I'm. It's not that I'm out on Pujols. If I see him going, and I have seen him drop, you know, pretty close to that low end of the ADP that Jason was talking about at 184. In those situations, I'll pull the trigger on him. But for the most part, considering where I view first base as a whole as a position this year, if I don't have a first baseman around that spot in the draft, something has gone wrong in my draft. And so I'm typically trying to get my first baseman a little bit earlier on in one of the higher tiers. But I don't have a problem with it because you're not paying very much for him this season. And like Jason said, except for in 2013 when he had 17 home runs and missed a bunch of time with injury, he has delivered 25 plus home runs in pretty much every season. So, I mean, I think that while he's getting older and the injuries are piling up, I mean, he's pretty much, you can lock in 25 to 30 home runs and feel pretty confident you're going to get there in spite of everything. Let's go ahead and take a quick break. We'll be back right after this.
It's that time again. That's right. It's fantasy baseball season, and the Fantasy Black Book is back and better than ever. This is Joe Pizzapia, author of the 9-time best-selling Fantasy Black Book series, number one right now on Amazon, on iTunes, and for the first time ever, the Fantasy Baseball Black Book can be held in your hand. Yes, what a beautiful world we live in. Head over to Amazon and buy your hard copy as well today. Baseball is coming. Are you ready?
All right, let's jump right into Tommy Joseph. We had a little bit of a discussion kind of offline in our group chat about Tommy Joseph and the next guy we're going to discuss, which is Greg Bird, and which one's more valuable. Mike, I'll let you talk about Tommy Joseph first. What are your thoughts on him for this season?
Well, first off, Tommy Joseph is somebody, I mean, he's kind of a late bloomer, and I like him as a, you know, nice corner or, you know, bench option, somebody that you can kind of use, sell, you know, a little bit, but not as a full-time player. And based on his cost, you're getting him as a full-time, you know, player for your team, and, you know, at 216. And yes, he did have a nice second half of the year, but I just don't believe in the profile quite yet. He still has some strikeout in his game. There's no speed at all. He's going to be playing on a Phillies team that I don't believe in fully. I don't necessarily believe in his 290 batting average from July on either. I just think you're looking at a guy in Joseph that, you know, first off, he looks like he's 45. I just want to say that he looks like, you know, he can retire next season. He has like gray hair in his beard.
He's the spawn of Greg Oden.
Yeah, definitely some Greg Oden to him, but he's a righty. And, you know, I have him projected right now for 24 home runs. Some projections have him upwards of 30. I just don't see that in his profile. And, you know, if you expect him to hit 30 home runs, then yeah, taking him just outside the top 200 is an okay bet. But based on what I think of him, I just don't see him that way. I think he's more of a 250, 260 hitter, 20 to 25 home runs, and playing on a team that's not going to offer a ton of counting stats. And there's guys like Greg Bird that you can get at a lower cost that provide much higher upside, in my opinion.
Before I throw it over to Jason, which I will do in 1 second, I got to stand up for my guy who looks much older than he is, because that is a fate of mine as well. So there's nothing wrong than looking like you're in your mid-40s when you're in your 20s.
Sounds like Tommy Joseph sleeps a little bit more than you do, probably.
Tommy Joseph looks like, if you look at his picture on MILB.com, looks like a dad from a sitcom. Like, but he's only 25 years old, so that's it.
It's shocking he's 25, seriously. If you're listening right now, go and like look at a picture of him and tell me he's not 40.
Jason, what are your thoughts on old man Tommy Joseph?
As the one guy on this podcast that is in his mid-40s, and he does look older than me. You know, I mean, the skills are that, I mean, I really liked what I saw from him, even though he's a late bloomer. I mean, you especially as a righty first baseman, you know, the threshold's kind of high, because you're seeing a lot of those same handed pitchers, and he handled himself very well in that regard. Really hit the lefties well. 14 of the 21 homers still came against righties, so we know he can still get around on those pitches. I like that. I like this Phillies team. I don't think it's a playoff contender. Yet it's got some pieces where if everything falls in the right way and they're willing to trade something, maybe they can get into the wild card if they get out to a nice start. Overall, if I mean, you compare between he and Bird, obviously Bird's got the better lineup situation, but Joseph's going to be hitting higher in that lineup. Bird's probably going to be hitting a little further down. And you're looking at two guys that close together. For me, I want the guy that's hitting in one of the top four spots, and that's where I like Joseph better.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Tommy Joseph?
Well, I mean, I think Joseph, I like the power upside, obviously. I think Mike's projection of 24 home runs, I mean, that sounds, I can't argue with that at all. I think he does have 30 homer upside, but I don't know if he's quite an everyday player for them. I mean, I understand where they're sitting at and stuff, but I mean, he kills lefties, and it's a big platoon split, big drop off. I think when he does get days off, it's going to be against the righties, because you don't want to take him out against the lefties. And they kind of have a crowded situation. You got Howie Kendrick that's going to need at bats. He can probably get some at first base. I mean, I know he's not an exciting option, but he's going to eat into somebody's at bats. And Joseph, I mean, you got to remember the Phillies outrated him off the 40-man roster after last offseason. So, like, they don't think, I mean, yeah, he put up a nice season, but I'm still skeptical of the walk rate. It's not anything that's ever been strong, and he's not going to be a batting average guy. And I know I hate this comp, but he kind of fits into the CJ Cron comp-ish again. CJ Cron area for me again, which is the second time we mentioned him, which is too many. So, I mean, you look at the walk rate, like I said, 3.7 in the first half, but he did improve to 8.6, cut the strikeouts, you know, in the first and second half. So I think he's got a relative safety to him compared to somebody like Greg Bird, because, I mean, what Greg Bird did in his limited playing time in 2015 was kind of unprecedented for him. If you want to shift gears to that direction, he showed power that he's never shown at any level before at such a home run pace. I mean, I think people are taking too much of what Bird did, hitting 11 home runs and 157 at bats, as to who he is. He's not that type of guy. I don't think Bird is more than a 20 home run kind of guy, just because.
What?
That's not even talking into the fact that he's got had two shoulder surgeries. He's more of a line drive guy. He's only hit 20 home runs once in the minor leagues, and that was in A ball. He's going to hit a lot of doubles in that park, but I know it's a good park for lefty power, but I question the shoulder injuries, and he's going to hit down the lineup. You might get empty runs totals, and Tommy Joseph's going to be more of a guy in the middle of a lineup. It's going to be not that bad, and he's going to help you all across the board. So if I have to pick, it's Joseph for me, and it's really not as close as it maybe other people think so.
Before Mike blows a gasket, I do have to correct you, because, I mean, he has hit 20 home runs before. He just did it between multiple levels in 2014 and 2015. So I mean,
no, I'm looking right. Well, okay, 2015.
He did it 3 years in a row from 2013 all the way through 2015.
No, he didn't. 2014, he had 14 home runs in two levels, seven in each.
He's seven in high A, seven in
double A, and
double
six
A,
and
six
in rookie ball.
So, but I mean, either way, and I'm only saying it just to, you know, just to get the correct stats out there. But I actually agree with you. And not necessarily – do I think he could hit 20 home runs in the major league level? Of course I do. I mean, he's playing in Yankee Stadium. You know, he's going to hit in a pretty decent lineup. It's a great park, especially left-handed. But the shoulder surgery, to me, is what scares me away from Greg Bird and pushes me towards Tommy Joseph. Because it's not like Philadelphia is a bad place to hit either. He's going to be hitting in the middle of the lineup, like Jason said. And I actually think that lineup is pretty decent. It's not amazing, but it's got some sneaky goodness to it. And they've got guys at the minor league level. I mean, when Matt and I did the Phillies Prospect podcast, it is absolutely loaded with guys, including some who are probably on their way fairly quickly. It could get better at some point if they are competing. So I prefer Tommy Joseph. Mike, I know you're fuming over there, so go ahead and just jump on it.
I get the torn labrum, you know, worrying about the risk of that, because that certainly is, you know, something that you want to worry about. But he's going, you know, approximately 20 picks later than Joseph. Yankee Stadium isn't just a good ballpark for lefties. It's the best ballpark for lefties in all of baseball. And somebody that has really great, actually some of the best raw power from the left side is Greg Bird. You know, his Fangraphs page even has him at, you know, at 60 raw power. That's awesome. No, he hasn't shown, you know, 30 plus home run power in the minor leagues yet. But the fact that the torn labrum was at even before the season started last year, he's had a full, almost more than a full year when the season starts to really rehab and get better. You know, he's only going to play against righties, which is the majority of the time. I think he's going to get over 400 at bats. And if he gets more than 400 at bats, I think he's going to hit 25 plus home runs. You know, paying a 240 cost for somebody that's going to hit 25 home runs in Yankee Stadium in a lineup that I think is pretty solid. I think that's great value. You know, Tommy Joseph does have some good things here, but Greg Bird has always been one of those guys with a high pedigree, and I believe that there is a lot more power to come. And I think that he's going to, and not only does he play in Yankee Stadium, but he also has Camden Yards, he has Boston, he has other, you know, Rogers Center. He has a great division to hit in as well. I just think top to bottom, Greg Bird presents higher upside, and that's what I'm looking for from a first baseman that late.
All right, so there's a little bit of correction in 2014, some of those home runs were AFL numbers, and those obviously do not count towards his.
Nope, and he was pretty terrible in the AFL this year too. So I mean, if you're going to count that one, if you're going to count that AFL, you have to count this one too. So I mean, it's the power is not as great as some people think it is.
If you look around, when you look at his ADP, it seems like a lot of people are chasing him, because he's at 236, but he's been taken as high as 187. And you look at the guy in front of him, Mike Napoli, and the guy behind him, Chris Carter. These are guys that have hit 30-plus home runs at the major league level. So you don't have to speculate if a guy can do it. Those two guys have done it. And Carter's going after Bird. Napoli's barely going in front of him. I'd rather take the chance on the two guys that have done it before versus the guy who hasn't. And a guy that can't hit lefties either, so he only has so many plate appearances into him because he's going to get benched against lefties.
Well, to be fair, Chris Carter can't hit lefties or righties, and Mike Napoli...
But he can hit the long ball like a motherfucker.
Yes, he
41.
Can.
41.
but he's dropping. 41. He drops your other categories, and I agree with that. But we're talking Tommy Joseph here. This is like a versus Tommy Joseph versus Greg Bird. If we want to like separate it out to the whole entire first base pool, then we can talk other options. But just to one versus one, I'm taking Greg Bird all day.
I'm gonna set this up. I'm gonna do a who would you rather, guys. So bear with me here. Who would you guys rather have for next year only, Greg Bird or Justin Bour? And how close is it?
Not close.
Bird, not close.
What about... go ahead, Justin.
I'm going to go Bour.
Yeah, see, that's me too, so we're tied at two there.
But it's
how
close.
About Greg Bird or Lucas Duda?
Duda.
Duda for me too.
Wow, really? Bird.
I mean, but you look at Bird. Duda's going 22 overall, according on first baseman. And then Greg Bird's going 19th. And I mean, if you're going to like
almost
Duda, Brandon Moss.
Later,
Yeah, Brandon Moss isn't that far from Duda, so he's got to be in the same conversation, too. So, I mean, I think Bird is a guy, he looks like a value play, but I really don't think he's going to be. Because, like I said, the numbers he put up in his small major league stint in 2015 were still an aberration compared to everything he's done in the minor leagues before. And that's not counting a shoulder injury.
And I mean,
even know if he can hit lefties yet. We don't know. You know what I mean?
He can't hit lefties. I'm assuming he can't hit lefties.
Yeah, I am too. Everything I've seen up to that point in the minor league says he can't. But so many unknowns for a guy that people are thinking is a relatively safe guy with a high floor, but he's not.
And I mean, this is February 6th currently. I mean, if he comes in and looks fantastic and is flinging the ball around in
spring,
in
I hope
spring,
he doesn't.
Well, I kind of hope he does, because if he doesn't, I'm completely out. But if he does, like, his price is going to skyrocket.
Exactly.
So, I mean, it's kind of a lose-lose situation for me, because if he can't hit the ball out of the park in spring training, I have no faith that the shoulder is healthy enough to do it over the course of a 150-game season for him.
His 138 ISO in the Arizona Fall League this year, one home run in 17 games and 78 plate appearances.
Oh, who cares?
No, but hey, that's the first thing we've seen with the shoulder. That's the first thing we've seen, and the AFL's a launching pad, so I'm skeptical.
I think it's a fair argument. Let's move on, though, and talk about Lucas Duda. He's had some issues with injury. Jason, what are your thoughts on Lucas Duda? You said you would definitely take Greg Bird over him, so obviously you're probably not very high on him.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Duda missed his time with back issues,
yes.
Correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, that's where my problem is. Without your core, your power's gone. And we saw that last year with him. And back problems don't tend to disappear with age. And he is 30, turning 31 here soon. That said, when you look at where he's being taken right now, I don't have a problem with that, because everybody below him, I'd take Duda over everybody that's in below him in the current ADP, and I'm not really ready to go above, Justin Bour and Chris Carter. Those are the guys right above him. I think Duda's perfectly placed in his ADP right now, so I don't have a problem with this. But I'm not jumping back in, full bore with him, saying, okay, here comes 30 home runs again.
Mike, you've been a huge Duda fan in the past. Are you still a Duda fan?
Love me some Duda. And, Jason just said it with the draft cost. That's all I need to see. Yes, the back problems are something that's certainly alarming. But, before he ended up pretty much missing the rest of the year in 2015, he was doing great. I mean, the fly ball profile was trending up. The home runs were still there. I think that he would have had a really nice season. Yes, the back problems, again, are really alarming. But you don't have to pay for it at all. Going outside the top, 325 or so, that's somebody that's a complete dart throw, a complete speculation play, and I'm down to do that, especially at that point in the draft. I think that he's an amazing upside play, somebody that you can grab, and if it works out, it works out. And I think you'll know fairly early, because if he has a DL stint early in the season, or he's looking like he's like kind of wincing at the plate, just kind of flailing at things, not looking like he's using his core and getting strength behind his swing, then that's something that's a telltale sign that we can just kind of move on and find somebody else. And again, you're not paying for it. You can just drop him with ease and find somebody else on the waiver wire.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Lucas Duda?
This is the type of guy that can win you your league, man. You take somebody like this real late, and he hits 25, stays healthy, hits 25, 30 home runs, and with the way the first base position projects to be, I mean, that's huge. Yeah, for what he's costing you, which is nothing, I mean, he's a hell of a play, but I mean, if I have to pay an actual price in an NL-only format or something like that where scarcity and the waiver wire is going to come into play, then I don't want Duda because it's too big of a gamble with the back injury, like you guys have all mentioned. That's a scary thing. But he can't hit lefties and stuff like that. So, but in a shallow league, and it's where it's going to cost me nothing, and the replacement level, guys are, you know, guys in the tier we kind of just mentioned, Greg Bird, Brandon Moss kind of area, give me Duda and I'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you, and I think it's a really good point that you bring up that in a deeper format league like an NL only, I may stick away from him because the at-bats are currency, and I just don't know what to project for a full season of Lucas Duda for this year. I mean, like Jason said, the back injury is scary. Back injury is scary for a lot of guys because they can reoccur, and surgeries don't always work, and rehab doesn't always work. It's kind of a hit or miss, and sometimes those kind of things can even make it worse on you. So I think in a shallower format, I'll take the risk because there is, there'll be replacements on the waiver wire. The deeper the format goes, the more likely I'm staying away from him. But at the current draft price, I mean, you're not really having to pay anything. So it is a little bit worth the gamble for me. Let's go ahead and move over to Brandon Moss, who signed a deal recently with the Kansas City Royals. Matt, you are a Cardinals guy, so you've gotten to see Moss up close and personal for the last little bit. What are your thoughts on his move to Kansas City?
I think it's a good bargain for Kansas City. I think Moss is a guy, it's underrated in the outfield corners. I mean, he's not going to be, we're not going to win a gold glove or anything, but he's not to the level where you have to hide him from the outfield. But that might be just coming from me watching Matt Holliday run around out there for a couple of years. So my opinion might be a little skewed there, but Moss is a guy, empty batting averages, of course, so don't expect anything like that. But he was on his way to a very, very, very solid season last year until September. September came around, and he hit .099 in September. And that's in a lot of at-bats because the genius running the Cardinals kept throwing him out there every day, regardless of, you know, going 9 for 91 in September and October. But hey, he played every day down the stretch and might have very well cost him a couple games because he was so bad. He's a streaky guy, as you know, but that was obviously the low. At the high point of the season, man, he could carry you because the power is real. I mean, and you look at to cherry pick another month now, June, where he had 8 home runs at .333. He's going to get semi-regular at-bats, which he would need. You know, he's a streaky guy. He's a very smart hitter. I mean, you read the interviews he's done with Eno. He's very, very cognitive of what's going on and what he needs to do to get better. And I wish I'm a little bummed that he's not going to get to spend any part of his career in a good hitter's park besides, you know, his rookie part in Boston, which he didn't really get much time. Because I was kind of hoping Brandon Moss would go to Colorado because he could legit hit 40 home runs there. But I think in Kansas City with the playing time, mid to low 20 home runs, .240, .250 average, that's a solid play in AL only. So you could do a lot worse than scooping up Brandon Moss.
Jason, what are your thoughts on Brandon Moss?
Don't like him. When you look at, we'll talk about Logan Morrison in a minute, but if you look at the projections, look at Steamer projections for these two guys, and they're both about a third of a win player. One of them got a $2.5 million deal, and one of them got 15 over 2 years. You know, this Kansas City is obviously looking at this saying, this is what we need. We need a first baseman next year because they're clearly planning on Eric Hosmer being gone after this season. And they should be. So they have to come up with another first baseman solution. And this was the one they chose on the open market. I mean, he's going from a park that for lefties, Bush was a 98 out of 100 for home run park factors. He's going to Kauffman, which is a 77 out of 100. So he's going to take a bit of a hit there. The batting average is already hurting you. I'm looking at this saying I hope he gets to 20 home runs and hits .240, but he hasn't hit .240 since 2013, and the batting average has really taken a tank the last couple of years. So if you go look at some of the other things, you see where he's being taken, and I'm looking at guys behind him saying, I'll take that guy, I'll take that guy, I'll take that guy, and I'll take that guy, and that's not a good thing for Brandon Moss.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Brandon Moss?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting with Kansas City. Like, they added Jorge Soler, who has a little bit of contact problems. And then Brandon Moss obviously has, you know, a ton of contact problems. And the Royals are typically a team that, you know, covets guys that can, you know, put the bat to the ball consistently. And it's just kind of odd to me that Moss is there. But, you know, I just don't see the difference between him and, like, Pedro Alvarez, who, you know, I know he's not signed yet, but, you know, he's going.
That would be a huge difference.
It's not that big because they both have the same amount.
That's one of the guys. When I say that guy, Pedro Alvarez is one of those guys.
But like, that's the thing. I just, you know, Moss, I look at what he did, you know, with Oakland. That's kind of what I compare this to. And because actually, you know, again, you know, for left-handed batters, they both have the same par factor, at least on the last, you know, 3 years. And, they're both negative 20% according to HQ's ballparks. And I just, you know, I think that's going to hurt his power a bit. You obviously aren't going to have him for batting average because he, you know, hasn't hit better than 234 in 2014. And that was his last season with Oakland. He also had pretty bad home road splits while he was with Oakland for those 3 years. The best one was in 2012. So we really haven't seen him do great in batting average in you know, any time, but, you know, 2012. And I just, you know, I'm just kind of blah on him. I think that he's a pretty mediocre player, somebody that you can maybe use at times, especially in AL only, but other than that, he's pretty much nothing for me.
Having watched him play, I think he's one of the guys that doesn't really matter what park he plays in.
It's like the Chris Davis argument last year, where everybody was all scared about him moving to Oakland, but I mean, he's got man strength. His power is going to play anywhere, so I'm not necessarily worried about a dip in home run production. I'm more worried that he tanks you in other spots. But considering where he's going, if you're looking for cheap power late, he's a guy to go for. I just think there's enough of those guys laying around in this day and age that you may not want it unless you're looking for a guy who will have multi-positional eligibility and can give you some cheap power.
If you look, Steve Pierce would be that guy. Multi-position eligibility, cheap power. I have more faith in Steve Pierce hitting 20 home runs in Rogers Center and playing in the AL East than I do Brandon Moss doing it in Kansas City.
That's fair. I mean, I like Pierce a lot. That's fair.
And he's 70 picks behind Brandon Moss right now.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. Steve Pierce, though, he only is eligible.
Second, I think.
No, he only has first base in leagues that require at least 20 games.
Yeah, if it's 20 games.
Yes. So if you're playing 15 or 10, then he'll have second base too, and he should, you know, probably gain it pretty quickly in season.
He was my tout war second baseman last year because everybody forgot he qualified as second base. I dropped to $2. Everybody's like, why? I'm like, why play second base?
They have the 15 games, right? In tout
correct.
Wars.
Yes.
So that, yep. Yeah. You were able to sneak that one through. But I mean, you know, there are
one
some
of the
other
few things I did right.
There are some other guys kind of in the lower range that might be able to offer some cheap pop too. So let's go ahead and talk about the last guy. He is re-signed with the Tampa Bay Rays just recently. That is Logan Morrison, ending my hopes and dreams of Chris Carter getting signed there.
Not necessarily.
Not you don't think that that ends the. You think they could bring Carter in for a platoon?
If Logan Morrison is ending the dreams of signing anybody, then that's somebody you don't want them.
Correct.
That's very true.
That's fair. Jason, what are your thoughts on Logan Morrison?
So at $2.5 million, I honestly don't care. I mean, if for $2.5 million, he could go sit on the bench. He could be a strong side of a platoon. It's kind of weird when you look at Logan Morrison. I don't know if people understand just how goddamn awful he was to start the season. He was 6 for his first 64. He was hitting under 100, striking out 38% of the time. And I was like, just cut him. Cut bait. You messed up. It was a one-year deal. Just let him go. And then he ended up getting a hit on May 1st. They give him a couple of days off. And then he comes back. And if you allow me to cherry pick here, once he came back from his four-day break until he got plunked on the wrist and broke his wrist, he had a 127 weighted runs created plus. He was that much above league average. He had a 358 weighted on base average. All of a sudden, he was hitting, and they were doing it. They were, you know, sitting him against most lefties, setting him up against the righties, which is what the Rays are going to do a ton of this year. It's going to be platoon city in a lot of different places, except for center field and third base. But they're going to have a lot of platoons, and so they set him up for success, and he rewarded them with it. He hit. And so, to your point earlier, this is why signing a Logan Morrison shouldn't preclude them from adding a right-handed bat, because just put a right-handed bat with Morrison and go, and there's your first base platoon. And they could end up with something like that for under $6 million. So I actually like Morrison in AL only leagues because you can get him $3 to $5 and he should be able to bring you mid teens power. And you could do a lot worse at corner infield in the AL only than Morrison. And those numbers look bad last year because of that first part of the season. But people kind of forgot about him, and all he did was go out and hit the rest of the way.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Logan Morrison?
Yeah, I mean, and even if if we did sign Carter, he wouldn't just play first. You know, he could DH against lefties as well. So, I mean, there's definitely multiple avenues in which we would use Carter, even if he wasn't playing first base. But I digress. Lomo, Jason said, I was going to cite, after the first month how well he did. And, that's absolutely true. He was, he was solid. So, for fantasy, if you're going to kind of translate it to fantasy terms, he's definitely a lower level AL only play. I think I had him on an AL only team for, a couple months last season once he heated up a bit. And that was fine. Was he exceptional? Absolutely not. Is he somebody that, you want to draft in any type of mixed league, pretty much any format of a mixed league? Probably not, but I do think he's gonna get 350 plus at bats against righties this year, which should put in 13-15 home runs and a few RBIs and runs here or there. Not gonna be a batting average guy, but I wouldn't be surprised if he hit 250 plus and had a little bit of pop in his swing as well. So I think he, as long as you get him in the right spots, he can be useful. But he's certainly not somebody that is mixed league or even shallow AL only material.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Lomo?
Yeah, I'm with Mike. I mean, I think he could be somewhat useful with no expectations. A nice end of the roster filler. Is he going to play any outfield this year? Or is that going to happen? Or,
No way.
Okay. I knew he played outfield a couple years ago. I wasn't sure.
He's got a range like
played. Yeah. Played, air quotes.
I'm not up on my, my Logan Morrison.
Napoli would play a better outfield.
Hey, that's fair.
Okay, maybe Tommy Joseph, too. His advanced age.
With his walker. Morrison's it's all batting average dependent because if he hits 250, that's a win because he's gonna bat more. He's going to get more playing time. He's going to hopefully hit, 15, 18 home runs. That's if he stays healthy. But can't really count on that. He's only had over 500 plate appearances once in the last three, four, five seasons. So it's very uninspiring, but you could do worse than AL only because it does get pretty ugly. So.
He's there for the taking. He is the 40th in first baseman. You could absolutely dollar day him as your corner infielder and be happy with it.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at his underlying statistics from March and April, he had a 28.6 hard hit percentage, and it progressively just rose pretty much every single month throughout the season. Really turned it around after, like you guys said, really slow start to the season. I think he is a nice little cheap AL-only option because I think, Jason, like you mentioned, I think people are kind of going to just gloss over him. They're going to be worried about platoons. They're going to be worried about the slow start and seeing kind of the overall numbers. I think he is a cheap option for AL-only at your corner spot, especially if you go expensive in the outfield or in other spots in your lineup. So, Logan Morrison is an interesting guy in deep formats. That is going to kind of wrap up the discussion for this. Jason, thank you for joining us.
Hey, it was fun again. Thanks for having me.
Definitely. Look forward to actually officially getting to meet you when I think Mike and I head out to Tout Wars in March.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome. I can't wait for that weekend. It's my favorite weekend of the year. And I got to cut it a little short. I'm not hanging around for the Sunday activities because I have to get home. My NL Keeper League draft is at 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. Oh, so wow. I've got to wake up after fun on Saturday night, fly directly home, and then drive over to my draft and do that. And that part won't be fun because I will be in rough shape on that weekend. But I wanted to say with the Paul and I don't know if you guys listened all the way through, but what we're doing is we're recording a labor preview show on Sunday night. And then as we plan on what we're going to do, and then on Monday night, we're going to do we're going to live record like we did last year, where we reacted to Howard Bender stealing all of our damn picks. But we're going to publish both of those the day after the draft. So on Tuesday, you will be able to hear what we planned on doing, then hear how we did as you read through the results. So we're we're pretty excited about that, because last year we got a lot of great feedback from people saying, hey, it was cool to listen to you guys react to the draft the next day. So now we're like, well, let's put the planning phase together with the actual live play-by-play and see how that goes.
Yeah, yeah, see how you adapt to things and everything. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing that, because I definitely I listened through the entire podcast last year of you guys going live and you having to leave for or go to bed so you could try to make it to the airport on time. Then
you remember I overslept. You remember I still missed that flight, right?
Should just drafted.
This year I set up my travel plan so I will be in the city I need to be the night of the thing. So I will be doing labor from my hotel room. Cause yeah, all that. I need to go to bed, and I woke up 20 minutes before my flight took off.
Well, the best part of that whole situation was Paul, drafting by himself, talking about how much he was just going to, you know, Paulize his team.
Yeah.
Jason's gonna hate this pick, but Jason, why?
I'm doing it anyways.
Jason, why don't you remind everybody where you can be reached on Twitter, and then again where people can read and listen to your stuff.
So at Jason Collette on Twitter, the column goes up on RotoWire on Mondays or Tuesdays each week. Last week was my bold predictions for the American League. This week will be my bold predictions for the National League. I've typically held on to these until after I've done my expert drafts, but given my finish in the last couple of them, that's clearly not helping me. So I'm just going to go ahead and put these things out there now. So those are the thing. And then at RotoWire, they also put, as part of the draft kit, my annual piece on diving in the dumpster bin, looking for, you know, last year's trash that becomes this year's treasure. I mean, last year I mentioned somebody like Rick Porcello, who ended the season with a 24% strikeout rate because he started using his fastball more. And, you know, he did it, nobody was noticing. And then he goes out and steals a Cy Young from Justin Verlander. So these guys that people kind of give up on. And every year I go through and I put together a 23-man roster as cheaply as I possibly can. And I don't think I spend any more than $5 on anybody based on their previous year value. And then they end up putting, when you combine their value, they put like $320 of profit out there. Like nice. Chris Davis with a K is one of those guys. He had $5 and nobody wanted to spend. He spent $5 on him and he ends up producing $18, that kind of thing. So I've written that piece for the RotoWire draft kit the last couple of years, and it's in the magazine if you go to the if you buy the print version, but they just published the online version today.
Are you doing a new pitch tracker again this year?
You know, I want to, but there's no stories right now. I've only seen two new pitch trackers, so I've been kind of waiting for the third one to come out. And normally I've got enough stories by now to do it, but it would look kind of silly to have two stories up there. I think one of them was Craig Breslow, and the other one is Dylan Bundy, who's adding that cutter back.
I'm excited for that, actually.
I am too, because you know, that was supposed to be his best pitch, and the Orioles took it away from him. They're giving it back to him, but that's it. I haven't seen any other stories, so I've been hesitant to put it up because it's just light, and I don't know what's going on this year. If teams are being more quiet, maybe they're like, hey, the Collette guy is just pissing us off and tipping everybody's hat. But I haven't heard anything.
Well, if you see any stories about guys getting new pitches or changing parts of their arsenal, definitely send it over to Jason on Twitter at Jason Collette. Matt, what are you doing right now, and where can people reach you?
I'm still behind on the prospect pieces. Unfortunately, I had some of family events and unfortunate, you know, friends passing away at too young of ages. So I got delayed in all that stuff, turned out the Reds today. So thank you for being patient about it. And we'll get them out as soon as we can. Top 100 or 200 or 300. I don't know how many I'm going to go. We'll be out sometime next week for fantasy prospects. So please check that out. Hope everyone enjoyed the team preview series, which I think was a big success. And let's keep Friends with Fantasy Benefits on your iPhone or whatever for the rest of this offseason. We'll get all these positions done.
Mike, where can people reach you? What are you working on?
Yeah, reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. Keep on checking out the site and all of the rankings. I know we're going to have a reboot on that this week. You can check out my piece on Baseball HQ this year, daily matchups, and I'm still doing my thing for Fantasy Pros as well. And can't wait to meet you at Foley's, Jason, as well. I hope to get a little crazy.
Yeah, that is part of the fun, usually on Friday and Saturday night. The cool thing is my corporate office, when I'm up in New York City, is three blocks away from Foley's.
Oh, nice.
Which always makes, yeah, we just moved over there a few months ago, so it's like I could step out, make, you know, a very short walk and walk in and say hey to Sean or Damien behind the bar and have a drink.
I've never been there, so I'm like super excited to just, you know, see the atmosphere and everything. I mean, it's going to be awesome.
It is good. It's you got to one of these days get an autographed baseball on the wall. I always make sure I point that out to my coworkers. See, look here. That's how popular I am here. I have a baseball on the wall.
And you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. Read all my stuff currently on friendsoffantasybenefits.com. And I have a weekly article that goes up on Fangraphs, Fantasy Side, which is called Rotographs. I've been a little lazy so far the last couple weeks, but I'm revamping my rankings for Rotographs and for Fantasy Pros and FriendsFantasyBenefits.com, but I should have an article out this Wednesday. I think it may be on like Bounce Back Players or something like that. I don't know. I haven't really started writing it, so I'll figure it out at some point. if you give us a rate and review on iTunes and it's of the 5-star variety, we'll make sure you get into a listener league. Or eligible to win other prizes later on in the off season, as long as you screenshot it and send it to me on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits or via the email that I mentioned a little bit ago. That will wrap us up for this episode. For Jason, Mike, Matt, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.